Hello and welcome to a football podcast. My name is Devang Desai and I'm joined by the usual suspects, David Goss and Nick Andrade. On today's show, we chat the MLS CBA getting ratified, Man City staking their title credentials, Beckham goes all in at Inter Miami, and of course, it's your questions on Ask AFP. Gentlemen, how was your weekend? David, are you still in Long Island, I think?
Yeah, I'm snowed back in. Second snow of the week on Long Island, which is, I'd say, the one place in the Northeast region where it snows and you can't like find a mountain, even if it's a bad one, to ski down, which is what I would do in other parts of anywhere, basically. So yeah, I'm pretty good. Devang, how about you? Because you came in a little groggy, maybe gravelly in the voice. Are you feeling it? Are you ready for this?
So if you listen to Open Era, the other podcast I'm on, which is about tennis, you'll know I'm a big tennis fan and the Australian Open has started. And if you also are familiar with time zones, we don't line up super well with Melbourne. So it was a long night, some great tennis, good work day as well. But I'm feeling good, guys, because it's rejuvenated me from the shambolic week of soccer that I watched. And my level of sadness because of soccer was so high on Saturday that I was actually a bit stunned that I could still feel this poorly about a sport.
That's how I feel most of the time. If one of my teams loses, and I just hate this about me, but like I'm so tied to like my teams, and if they win or lose, my feelings for the rest of the day. And it's like, I need to cut that out. I just need to watch a game and then be okay. But it just never happens.
Nick, your team won a European title 2 years ago.
No, I understand,
Premier League last year. And about 45 seconds ago, before we got on, you go, I'm actually numb to it now. I don't even care.
No, I didn't say that I didn't care.
So you had given up on everything.
I said that I'm just, my emotions are gone forever.
I get what you mean. I get what you mean, Nick. Like, you wear your heart in your sleeve.
Yes.
You put the fan in fanatic.
Yes.
If something like the day will shift based on the result. So to go into this, after the robbery at Molyneux, or the Craig Possett affair, as we can call it, that shambolic display in Wolves Arsenal, since that moment on Tuesday onward, the week just got worse and worse. And it wasn't even about the soccer anymore. But I firmly believe at that moment, it just went on a downhill. So I'm with you, Nick. A single moment can shape your feelings for quite some time.
I got to say, that was really bad, though. Like, I can't believe, like, I was on your side. I'm like, this is ridiculous. How is this happening? And then they kept the decision afterwards.
Listen, the best part is David, being the gem he is, responds in our text thread. He's like, not trolling, but by disco, or by the loss of the game. I'm like, get the heck. The rage level was high. I tried to hide it with my reply, but I hope you know. I hope you know how
I thought there was a chance you were going to stop talking to me. Once I sent it, because I sent it genuine. If everyone remembers at the time, it's like David Luiz comes behind. I can't remember who the attacking player is. Gets red carded.
William Jose, yeah.
Yeah, it looks like there's no actual contact, right? I think that's how we all feel now. Is that correct?
Right. Well, yeah. A little bit, yeah.
At the time, it wasn't clear there was no contact. I think the debate was around whether or not that incidental contact in that way deserved to be red carded, penalty, all the things combined. And so I just sent a casual, like, yeah, oh, here's what I think, real quick reaction to the text group. And then just DeBang's like, all caps, are you kidding me? This is garbage. This is why I don't care anymore. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's a good point. This is his team.
You know what it was? You know what it was, David? It was heartless. It was a heartless response. It was a heartless response. And
like, David is notoriously perfect at sending a GIF or something very sarcastic at the wrong time, specifically. Like, right when my emotions are built up and like I feel I'm red in the face of anger for something that happened, I look at my phone and it's David and it says the Toronto Toffee group, and it's some sort of GIF that pisses me off further, and I don't respond.
It's a skill. Listen, it's a skill.
Can I tell you what the best part about this is, though? I am that guy in all my other groups, because I'm a Knicks fan and a Mets fan and a Jets fan. So I'm the guy who gets all the messages of, right, like, shaking, you know, STMH, like, can't believe this franchise is a joke. And I get to be that guy now in this group, which, man, it's everything for me.
It's an art. Not everyone's good at it, I'll tell you that. And David has perfected it. It's It's great. It's, you know, the banter's great though. And also things came good. Everton recovering the great steal for Everton over the weekend. Toronto Toffees lives on strongly, of course. The text chain will continue. A reminder, friends, we are on patreon.com/afootballpodcast. Join today. You get the show ad free. You get to join us on the Discord as well. We're chatting footy across the world. Plus, if we get to 30 patrons, we'll release more interviews with newsmakers from MLS, CPL, and the global game. So head over to patreon.com/afootballpodcast and join today. After the break, plenty of news, starting with Club World Cup, the CONCACAF Champions League, and of course, news on the new MLS season coming up next on A Football Podcast. Welcome back to A Football Podcast. The Club World Cup is going on. You'll be forgiven for not knowing that's the case. I think it's with everything happening in the world and millions of soccer games occurring at all times of the day. I'm not going to blame you if you weren't aware that the CWC is into its final, but it is certainly worth talking about because of the teams involved. Of course, you have Bayern Munich, a team we all know, Robert Lewandowski scoring twice to beat Al Ahly to secure their berth for the German Giants, but they're going to play Tigres, a team that we know well from North America. I'm telling you, watching Gignac against Bayern was meant to be, David. I just feel like we have to watch an artist against one of the true group of artistmen. I don't know how to describe this, but it's a true clash of icons, I feel like.
And I thought we had to start with this because no show in the world will start with this, so we had to be the one.
They're not brave enough, frankly.
Yeah. That's true. But like I had to have a place where it matters. And I would say, whatever, it's, you know, it's 2020/21. There are very few fans at these things. It's all being played in Qatar, which I guess they're at the World Cup venues. I've kind of been looking them up and it's like some of them are like at old stadiums that are being replaced for the World Cup, but the World Cup's in like a year. So I don't know when they're going to build that and make that replacement. But Tigres beats Palmeiras 1-0 in the semifinal. No CONCACAF team has ever gotten to the final of a Club World Cup. It's pretty much been a line like this for at least 10, 15 years now, where the CONCACAF winner, if they get deep enough into the semifinal, they play the Copa Lib winner from South America. And historically, Mexican teams have really struggled in this competition. I say that because it's only been Mexican teams. A lot of them have actually lost in the quarterfinals and not even made it to the semis, and obviously none of them have won. So it's exciting because Tigres was, they're a giant. And if anyone doesn't remember, Tigres isn't one of the traditional powerhouses of South America. And back in 2013, they were in Copa Libertadores. It was the last year Mexican teams were in. And their ownership said, we want to win this. And they spent like crazy, including bringing in Gignac. They lost in the final to River Plate in like an epic two-leg tie. Then they proceeded to go on and dominate Mexico, and they literally could not win CCL. So they would win title after title in Mexico, and they lost to Monterrey, their city rival, in multiple CCL finals, and they've kind of just always choked. And it felt like it's all come to an end. Gignac's older, Duenas, like a lot of the pieces that have been there for a while are all a bit older. And so it was cool, Devang, to see them like finally get there on their last legs, and they'll probably get smoked by Bayern, but you know, they've still made history.
And just to play there, like much is made obviously about how MLS club winning CCL would be so huge. And I think just to have maybe a Toronto FC play Bayern Munich a few years ago, if they had won, would have been insane. Like if we're in an actual competitive match, like that's the dream, really.
And I think that was the reason for MLS sides wanting CCL so bad, right? Was to prove yourself against the best clubs in the world.
It's awesome. If anyone can do it, if anyone could steal a result somehow, wouldn't it be Gignac, the man who can now go by one name anywhere possibly in the world? I don't know if I've seen someone that beloved, maybe on just soccer Twitter, but I feel like Gignac is, for someone who doesn't play in the big leagues, he's got a pretty big imprint.
Yeah, absolutely. He is a god in Monterrey, which is a massive city. He probably makes more than most of the guys in Europe playing at similar levels or even above. So he's super happy. He's fluent in Spanish. He loves being there. I think he'll probably stay after he retires. Like that's his home now. And you saw teams try and bring over the next Gignac, but it's not easy to find. And he's a world-class striker. Like, there's no other way to put it. He can score on half chances. He can score from distance, his head, his movement in the box, all the things he can do. So, yeah, I would agree with you. I think maybe I was too flippant about it. But, like, this is a team that has Guido Pizarro in midfield who played for Sevilla and, like, is a high-level Argentine central midfielder. They've got probably the most solid back line. And then Quiñones, who's played well so far, out on the wing, who can break anyone down 1v1. This is a Tigres team that I think if it was all, I don't know if you find a way to do it, they would compete in a European top five league. They would not be relegated, I don't think, the way they're set up. And then they could obviously add pieces from there. They've got internationals at every position. Bayern's just kind of a different monster. Although I don't know if you saw this. So they moved up their Bundesliga game last weekend to get into their flight to Qatar. Wherever they were, I think they were in Berlin. You can't like fly after midnight or something. So they moved the game up and then they had to drive to another city to get on the plane. And the plane was delayed because of mechanical issues and then could not leave because of the time issue. And so they slept on the plane, drove back to Munich and then flew to Qatar. So it was like this whole like 29-hour ordeal. Didn't really matter in the semifinal, but I don't know. For Tigres, you're taking anything you can.
It's almost like divine intervention was trying to stop them from going to this mindless tournament. Credit to FIFA for steamrolling through a global pandemic to hold the Club World Cup, which from all accounts, we were just talking about how cool it would be to have an MLS team in there, but this year you probably didn't need to have this. I'm just saying. And also the fact that we get to revisit some of the things about Qatar and the upcoming World Cup. And
yeah, for sure.
It's just third lovely. Global pandemic. Lovely all around. On that note, though, big changes coming to the CONCACAF Champions League. The Coles notes, 50 teams will qualify now for the group stage via domestic leagues and cup competitions. 20 from North America, 20 from Central America, 10 from the Caribbean. For Canadians, it's very huge, I would argue. They go from one spot for an MLS club and lower division sides to three dedicated places, a Canadian championship spot, obviously, and plus two additional ones for the CPL, which has one berth in the CONCACAF lead. So you're going from one to plenty, David.
And it sounds like, from what we've heard, the MLS Canadian clubs can now qualify via MLS play. So it could be three spots plus if a Toronto FC wins MLS Cup, you could still have three more spots. So as you said, Devang, and I'd like to hear what you think, but massive for Canada in general.
It's great. And I think, again, I mentioned TFC playing Bayern Munich or the hypothetical of playing a European giant. But in general, watching CPL, watching Forge go where they did and though ultimately come short, I think just watching them play in those matches was massive for that club and growing the stature of the CPL. This is a huge thing because I think not only is it a thing about like getting your players maybe onto somewhere bigger, but this also puts them in front of a bigger spotlight. I think just not in the region, but in the whole network of scouting to get them exposed for chances that they maybe not would have had at all, right? So I think it's great.
I agree with you completely. And I think they will now be looked at. And remember, we talked to Gus at York 9 about this international player push. If you are in the Caribbean or Central America and you can't get an MLS offer, and you know, Liga MX is a whole nother monster, you look at it and say, if I go to the CPL, I am guaranteed, not guaranteed, but there is right now a 20% chance that I'll be on a team that will play these teams in CCL. So at a minimum, you are now going to get seen. And I think that helps the CPL start to bring more talent in from Central America, from the Caribbean. And that's how USL has built themselves up. And that's how MLS built itself up originally with a lot of that talent. And then you've got, you know, if you can find gems from the Colombia, Uruguay, Paraguay, places like that as well. But that's huge. And I think just the status of the league in terms of like, where does it fall? And you know this better than me, but in the US, there's the whole like, well, what do you stand for? Who are you alongside? What names do I know? And so for the CPL to grow now to say, yeah, we play teams like Toronto FC and teams like LAFC and teams like Club America consistently, that I think is a selling point to the league about how it feels and what it can be.
Cosign. It's well said. And again, a promising step. I think there's some good breakdowns. I saw Jeff Carlisle have a good one on ESPN.com. Andrew Reeby did as well, if you want to do some further reading, because there are a lot of details. Speaking of a lot of details and things I probably cannot adequately explain to you in the allotted time, but the new MLS CBA has been ratified. We will have a season coming up. It's fantastic news, obviously. I think just as a zooming out a bit and realizing both the league and the players really seemingly put all their effort into negotiating for this, I think we're better off for it. They extended the deadline near the end last Thursday, and they got the job done after the players ratified the deal on Monday. So credit to those involved. The major headlines: 2-year extension with expanded free agency. So the existing agreement now runs through 2027. This rule about this free agency starting in 2026, players 24 and older with at least 4 years of MLS experience at the end of their contracts are eligible to become free agents. And the compensation is 100% of the player's salaries in 2021. David, I think the major takeaways is the free agency aspect. It is the now increasing importance of homegrown players, and the idea that the cap is eventually going to rise along with revenue. That's probably the end game here for both sides, but it looks like overall teams will have more money to spend should they do it.
There's going to be a higher level of required spend. I think that's how the players see it. So a cap going up means that's money that every team's going to spend, and then there was discretionary TAM, which teams could choose to trigger, and now that will go into the salary cap, which means there'll be more money available for the average player. I think for fans, the big things that stand out, one is there'll be a season. So that's good,
because soccer.
And that's kind of what we've all been waiting for. And then going forward, you mentioned the free agency, which will just allow more players to be in this pool. And we wrote down homegrowns because players are signing at a younger age. And so now, if you sign a homegrown deal, even out of college at 19 or 20, you're probably coming out of your first contract going to be a free agent, which is great because it means teams can be competitive about who they want to bring in and players can find the right fits, which I think will be huge going forward. So free agency, it's not an NBA style free agency or NFL where we all, you know, freak out and cover it and there's so much happening. That will start to happen, though, as this goes along. And then the cap rising is just your teams will get better. There's more money for them to spend. And what's good about the cap rising and not TAM or whatever convoluted thing MLS can create for it is teams can spend that however they want. TAM was specifically created to bring in this mid-level, you know, 6th to 9th on your roster, European or South American guy, blah, blah, blah. Forget that. If a guy on the team's good and they want to give him a raise because that's the best for this team, that's what they'll do. Another team, if they think they need to go outside the league and find a player, that's what they'll do. A third team, they look at another team in MLS and say, that guy's good. He's on the end of his contract. Let's bring him in and we'll give him more money. Whatever it is, teams are going to have the flexibility to use that the way they need. And Devang, I think what's huge, and we don't know yet what the final outcome of all of this will be, because we don't know what the world is, but there are clearly teams that are going to spend less in the world of soccer because of COVID. We saw this transfer window. I think it was about a third of the total money spent in moves from a year ago in January. MLS is now promising that their cap will increase at the same time. So what are the quality of players available to MLS from outside the league now that they're increasing spending as other people are decreasing it? Could be really interesting.
I might be super washed, but I really love seeing the 401k contributions will remain as agreed to in the previous CBA as one of the bullets outlined on the official website. I'm like, yeah, you get those four. You match those contributions, MLS. You better believe it. It's great to see. I'm super excited that we will have a season.
Devang just needs that portfolio.
Hey, I'm cutting copy for Well Simple in my spare time as well. So I know what's up. We're going to get a season. When exactly, I think, is the next question. Saw some discussion about pushing back the report date. February 22nd is the current reporting date for players. And the season is set to begin right now on April 4th, I believe, David. I don't think that's going to stay true, probably based on, again, citing current events and where we're at with the pandemic. But do you think we'll probably end up kicking off sometime in April?
I think it'll be late April, early May. I think we're not far off. The question mark was, well, when will this thing get signed? I think now that it got signed here everyone was already sort of ready to put in plan what was stated. So I think it'll be close. My understanding is I think TFC will be a little earlier because they have the Canadian Championships coming up, which was from 2020 and is a whole nother thing. And the CCL teams as well might be a little bit earlier across the MLS platform, across the MLS world. But I would expect that it's 2 or 3 weeks later at the most.
Before wrapping up this World Wings segment, we have to touch on Inter Miami. I had a monocle in my eye. It dropped. The tea I was drinking spilled when I read the following things linked to Inter Miami. Ryan Shawcross set to join. Kieran Gibbs set to join him as well. Beckham has pumped £11.2 million into the team. What is happening? Like, is this literally what Brits leaving to go on vacation? This is now Inter Miami setup. From the Beckham crew, where if you were a friend or vaguely known as an associate, you're good to go.
I'm pretty sure the OG NASL Tampa Bay Rowdies won like multiple titles with the British people at later in life like to live in Florida.
It's the business model. Right? It's the model. Yeah.
It's half of what we do anyway. I'm still, okay, this is February 8th. I am still giving the benefit of the doubt to the new setup at Inter Miami. So I am going to say, and I think Kieran Gibbs was connected to Montreal as well, right?
Right. He tried to move. He tried to get out of West Brom, but did not the last window. So there's a couple teams.
Right. So my guess is the Kieran Gibbs thing is like British guy everyone's heard of. I'm also going to assume Ryan Shawcross is going to be on a veteran minimum deal and is just like a guy to bring in because they know him as of now. If this proves to be wrong, I will change my tune. But for now, I'm not going to go full Anthony Hudson on them. I'm going to assume that that's not what they're doing.
I hope not. Lord, I hope not. Ryan Shawcross, please. Please. What are we doing? To not end totally on the Miami note, quickly, Montreal doing things, which I think is what the club's fans wanted them to do. I'll be honest, though. I don't know much about Bjorn Johansson. 33 goals, though, in South Korea last season, 1.43 per 90. Not a bad league, the K-League, but I think it's fair to say it's probably not MLS standard. David, you rate this addition?
So for starters, he was playing for Ulsan Hyundai, who are in the Club World Cup, whose center back is Kim Ki-hee from Seattle, who just signed Vako Kilashvili from San Jose. So Ulsan Hyundai is officially the 27th team in MLS. Congratulations. Welcome. Because they're part of the squad. This is an interesting signing because he was one of those, and I'm sure you know this better than I do from Canadian fan base as well. He was a dual national that someone found out on the deep internet when he was super young. And then it was the like on the message boards, everyone updating every time he scored like a youth goal or a Division II goal. And then he actually bounced around, scored some goals in the Netherlands. I would say the consistent thing for almost all of the signings this offseason, except for the Inter MLS ones for Montreal, is no one's really seen these players play. And right now, they're just trying to kind of cast as wide a net as they can on what they believe are unearthed prospects and then bring them in and get more out of them than people expect. That is my understanding of what's going on. That's what it looks like. And so no one's a guaranteed piece because they're not willing to spend for guaranteed pieces. The money you spend for that gets you a tight air, gets you a Nacho Piatti, those things. That's at a different level. So these are a lot of question marks. And then it's going to be Thierry Henry's job to get them all together. I think there's a chance this team could be fun because they don't know better. They're young. They're aggressive. Henry gets behind this group and they kind of are inspired and play well. Joaquin Torres as well, another admission. Addition, Ahmed Hamdi, who's on loan for a year from El Gouna FC in Egypt, which I've never even heard of as a club, but this is kind of the identity right now for Montreal, and they're just hoping a few of these dice rolls hit.
I do think it'll be fair to judge Thierry Henry after this season, though. Like, though it seems like a roll of the dice, and a lot of these people we haven't seen before, but I think he's been there long enough to instill whatever he wants to instill. He's been able to ask for the players he's wanted. Not to say that he hasn't wanted better players, maybe, but I think it'll be fair to judge Montreal on their merits and him on what he's done there since joining the Impact. Or sorry, CF Montreal. Apologies for that. That error. Also, this is a Suwon a Sue on Samsung Blue Wings podcast, David, just to remind you of our K-League allegiances, thanks to Daniel Henry. So just to correct the record, apologies to our Sue on faithful. We didn't mean to mess that up. It's a lot of stuff in North America, a lot of games in Europe. We'll talk about them next, coming up on AFP. Welcome back to a football podcast. The title race in the Premier League over? I said with a question mark to nothingness, but I think it's fair to say Manchester City is the firm favorite after the weekend where they beat Liverpool 4-1. And Alisson, nightmare. Jurgen Klopp just not having it, raging out. A Phil Foden celebration, Ilkay Gundogan, after a not great first half, cementing himself as maybe one of the Player of the Year candidates, in my opinion. You done, Nick? Is that it? I think you're done.
Well, you know, since I don't care about this season anymore, it doesn't matter. That game was just so embarrassing, wasn't it? Like, just even from a neutral standpoint, that was pretty embarrassing.
Well, I don't feel bad for Liverpool because, like David said, you guys have won a comical amount of things and still have a great team. But I think it was interesting to watch a team run out of gas in real time and be able to watch it just so vividly. I think, as a neutral, I'll say Liverpool have played an obscene amount of games. Like, they've been everywhere and back. They've beaten everyone and back. Like, I think the run they went on is incredible, and they're still probably going to be a top four team. But I wonder how much reinforcements they're going to need. And if they watch what Man City did, who kind of needed a couple years to regroup and re-add people to the squad to solidify themselves, I think you might be looking at a situation that's the same for Liverpool, whether or not they are footing the same bill that Man City footed to readjust and re-insulate is a different question. But to me, David, I think this is a Liverpool team that is still good, still very good, but they are not at the same level as Manchester City.
It's hard to me because while they were not great, they were the better team up until Alisson's mistakes, which were uncharacteristic. So it didn't feel like, wow, the way Man City set up, they made the game so tough for Alisson and they continued to pressure him and create opportunities. And eventually he made a mistake. He just, as a world-class goalkeeper, made one and then two of the worst plays of his entire life back-to-back in a massive game. It didn't feel as structural to me on this one of like, Liverpool have lost their magic and they can't really do it anymore. And obviously you still feel the injuries every time you watch them, especially at center back. I don't believe that this group is done. I also would say, I think the Man City one's an interesting comparison because I think this Liverpool group is so much younger and was started so much younger that there's either flip on for guys still to help kind of like rebuild that, or there's still internal improvement that it can occur from individual players rather than the Pep style, which is why I now need to spend 190 million euros on left backs or center backs again for the third time in 4 years. So it'll be interesting to see going forward. My thing on the title, let me just put this out there. Today, Atletico Madrid tied 2-2 against Celta Vigo. They'll still probably win the title. They now have 7 attacking players who have tested positive for COVID and are unavailable for a week to 2 weeks to maybe 3 weeks. I still don't think City has won the title yet because I just think 2020. I'm not telling you Man U is going to win it or Liverpool or Leicester. I don't know who catch them, but I don't think all of this is done yet. And I struggle with the way the season's gone because it's not the head-to-heads that matter. It's that teams lose to Sheffield United the middle of the week after they've just won big games because everyone's playing 1,000 games and nothing really makes sense.
Well, I guess my confidence in Manchester City comes from that fact. That fact that they wouldn't lose to Brighton 1-0 like Liverpool did. You know what I mean? Like, I think Man City doesn't put in these performances, at least not lately. Their unbeaten run is something ridiculous. Is it 14 or 14 wins in a row right now? Like, this is a team that literally cannot be stopped. So I think that's their one of their many positive traits is that they take care of business. TCB for short. Ugh, I'm sorry I said that, but it's true. It's damn true. And I will say,
but they also have got Champions League around the corner, right? In 2 weeks, Champions League kicks back up. You've still got FA Cup games for them.
That's the real thing that they need, right? So I will say also, I give them plenty of stick for this as well. For all the money they spent, Rodri's undroppable. Ruben Diaz is undroppable. Like, they hit on those guys. Like, money well spent, I think, is the a fair thing to say about that. The game in the weekend, arguably, for the neutral, Everton 3, Manchester United 3. Manchester United up 2-0 at halftime. Bruno Fernandes scoring maybe the goal of the season. Completely wrong-footing Everton's good goalkeeper, not the bad one. I could have sworn Pickford was playing, but it was Robin Olsen. I was shocked. I looked at the team sheet again because I'm like, oh, yeah, Pickford. He has no idea where he is, but it was Robin Olsen. So credit to Bruno, who I ragged on before. But like we've seen, Manchester United just stopped playing, kind of. A DDG error. I think it was an error on the first goal for sure. James with an incredible goal for number two. I think they wanted to take him off. Carlo Ancelotti was going to take him off, but let him on as a veteran move, maybe a manager who knows his player, and lo and behold, he scored. And then United benefited from a blunder, and it ended on Dominic Calvert-Lewin working harder than everyone else on the field and scoring a goal. He's one of my favorite players now. It was a great game, but I also feel very good about what I said about Manchester United last week, David, about not being legitimate title contenders, about being not frauds, but a very good team that, again, is not at that level of Manchester City.
Do you think if Pogba had stayed on, they would have won that game?
If he didn't have an injury, I guess, is the question. Probably, I think so, yeah.
I think that's the part to me coming out of this weekend is, if he's out 3 weeks, if he's out 4 weeks, it feels unsustainable for this team because, as we've both said, and I think you've touched on better than me, is the, you know, they don't dominate games. They don't have a specific way to win, which you saw in this one and not being able to close it out. It's really on pure talent for them. And Pogba is one of those talents. And so it's the same as if they lost Bruno Fernandes. You wouldn't think they could still win the title without either of those guys. So now Pogba out makes it so much tougher. Is Fred inserted into the starting lineup now? Can you create enough chances? And Pogba's versatility over the last few weeks has been huge. He's played out on the wing and helped, you know, defend when necessary, like at Liverpool. And then he's come inside and helped chance create. And he's been goal scoring and all those things that he should be able to do. And as much stick as he still gets, he's been a massive part of what Man U was doing well to get into first place. And so without him, it just doesn't feel sustainable for this group to try and continue to chase Man City. At the same time, I said Man City's not done. So I have to believe in someone. So I'm just still looking for that team that I'm going to believe in. I will say this. I think David De Gea was the biggest Alisson fan this weekend. When he was, oh boy. Yeah, that guy made mistakes. How bad was that guy?
That's every week almost.
Dean Henderson might be the most popular person in Manchester, like in general. And I hope he's ready because they are ready to send David De Gea to the trash bin. It's a bit tough to see, but also 10, 11 years, great run. Yeah. Happens to everyone. Might be time. What a thing to come into, though, for Dino, as he's called. I hope they still call him Dino.
Maybe he goes to Inter Miami. What do you think?
When in doubt, it's the new Club Med. Just to finish up EPL, Chelsea back in winning ways. Thomas Tuchel's renaissance is happening. They're not scoring a ton. It's not super fun to watch, but it's effective, and that's the TT way, perhaps.
And it's so surprising that you bring in a new coach because basically you're just looking for a culture change. And this is what you get. It's just like, eke it out, doesn't give up goals team, which I don't think was the point. And I don't know that that was totally the issue, but I guess all coaches will tell you if they follow some level of methodology, which is, these are the things I want my team to learn, and this is the way we go about it, normally starts defensively. So it would make sense that the focus would go there now. And he's brought a few more veterans back into the group to kind of try and bring that stability. And if you're Tuchel, you got to get results early to kind of get the front office and ownership on your side, as well as the fans. So it'll be interesting going forward. I know American fans are freaking out because Pulisic can't get a minute under the only, he was the only guy Tuchel knew when he took over the job, and now he won't play him. So it'll be interesting to see what it looks like going forward when he adds that level of creativity and try and opens up the 190 million, whatever that they spent on the attackers. 190 is a good number for me today. And tries to tap into that.
It must be super interesting to have this kind of set mandate where he probably knows he's not going to be there in 18 months when the contract is done. So you have like a finite amount of time to get things right and institute the things you want to do and to make sure you time them right. It's an incredible balancing act, and I mean, he's heavily compensated and well compensated to do it, but it's not an easy gig.
It's kind of, you know, when you think about the sport and like the bands and levels that are that exist, like where does he go next? You know, like what else was there for him except the, you were the available guy for a big club. If he can make it work and stay there, that's the best option for him because it's not quite obvious what his next role would be.
If you can be a star there, you can be a star anywhere. Was that the line you're about to use there? Because
exactly. I was just going to say, like, this would remind me of Unai Emery. Went to PSG, went to Arsenal, failed. And now where is he now? Is he back in Spain?
Yeah, he's back in Spain and having a fantastic time. I believe he's with Villarreal.
Yeah.
And the team's done well. And Lopetegui, who, remember, also had that whole weird Real Sevilla, Madrid thing. Yeah. Lost the Spain job. His Sevilla team is awesome. And those were actually the names I was thinking of as well. Of like, so if this doesn't work out full time, this could be an audition for him for an Everton level team. Maybe it's West Ham if David Moyes is done and that's a place to go. Maybe it's Newcastle when the new ownership group comes in. Whatever it is, that could be a role for him. Otherwise, is it national team, which would make sense for him? Or is it maybe a step down in Germany? It didn't work out for him at Dortmund, but he has that experience, all those things. He's just, I think it's a fascinating idea of like how we see everything. There's like these eight clubs that exist on their own, and then there's a middle band, and then there's other teams.
My question is like, who's his English comp? Or like in of an English manager? I'm trying to think of who fits that kind of mold.
Moyes is probably a decent comparison. Not as managers, right? But just as like career arcs of like finding, hitting that peak, probably being considered overly successful at their level, getting to quote unquote the highest peak, Man U in one and PSG and, you know, Champions League final the other, and then kind of dropping down and having to find your level because people didn't really see you as a manager at that highest level. Quite honestly, it'd be hilarious if Mourinho goes and he ends up long-term at Tottenham as like a Pochettino swap. Which would seem like the right level for him and expectations. But who knows? Maybe if he does well with Chelsea, we're all wrong and he's the long-term guy. It's, you know, never happened before at that club. So it could be the first time.
Open up the border, get the NAFTA parties going because Canada and the United States can celebrate something together. It is the football club Lille who are on fire in France. Jonathan David, 4 goals in 5 games. American Timothy Weah combining with JD to light up League One. Can they actually do this? Slash, will this league fold? Will they fold during the season? Will they complete it? I think there's a few questions we can ask about Lille, but A, the football's been fantastic. PSG has not looked good. And B, League One is in some dire things. I know Canal Plus just signed that TV deal, which should maybe help things in the short term, but it's quite the contrast, David.
I did not realize that it was Canal Plus. I just assumed it was Canal Plus, and I'm very glad that you said that before I did, because I would not have even guessed that that's the thing, but it makes sense. So yeah, I think we've talked about it the last few shows. Lille, they're playing well. It's good soccer. They are comfortable. They win games because they have better ideas. They've been stout defensively, and David's now on a tear, and that's the expectations there. So from where we stand, if you had asked me 6 months ago, I don't think, or whatever, the start of the season, I don't think Lille could have won. From where we stand now, there's no reason to believe that this isn't sustainable for them. And so hopefully, especially with Champions League and other teams having to focus on that, they're able to continue this. And it'd be a pretty cool way for whatever this season is, especially if the owner's trying to sell the team, for them to have a title to go with it.
They might need to add Uber Eats. They might need to have some other sponsorships to the name of the Uber Eats League One Conforma. They might need to add, get some gas companies involved. I don't know who's making money these days, but interesting times. In France, we end with a new segment. Speak Bundesliga to me. David, tell me something interesting that happened in Germany.
Well, so I woke up for Super Bowl Sunday. Great day of sports. And I watched an American start for Hoffenheim and Chris Richards, sent on loan from Bayern Munich. Has only started one game this year for Munich, so this is a big move. And Hoffenheim's manager, I believe, is Uli Hoeneß's nephew, and he was the Bayern 2 coach for a while. So he knows Richards very well, started in the back three against Eintracht Frankfurt, who are dominant right now. And so they ran all over Chris Richards and Hoffenheim. Now, specifically not Richards, but Andre Silva was good. And Philippe Kostic is a stud at left wing back. And that's one of those guys where you look at like fit and opportunity. Where do you find your spot? Kostic is pure creator, pure talent, but doesn't defend enough, doesn't run enough to be a fullback or a winger. And now he finds a team where he can start at the wingback position and just rampant down the left side. So it was a fun game. Hoffenheim have been fun to watch all year. So I'm glad Richards went there as a USA fan who's going to tune in to watch for them. And it's sad to me that the Bundesliga race is basically done because no one is deep enough, I think, to sustain the run against Bayern. Not that Bayern's been great, but Leipzig dropped points here and Wolfsburg dropped points here and Leverkusen and Gladbach now over the last 2 weeks. So that's been tough, but still, I think the most fun league to watch week to week.
The much derided book title, 1 Billion Americans by Matt Iglesias. That's what I feel like when I watch football in Europe now. There's an American on every team. There's an American lighting it up everywhere. It's something. It's absolutely incredible.
USA, baby. USA.
USA. Serie A, nothing too crazy. I think the league in general is maybe the most exciting in Europe. Yeah. Can make a good argument for that. Spain, Atletico Madrid dealing with COVID, which you're right. We talked about title races being done. Who knows what that throws into things. And Real Madrid still not looking super great either. And Barcelona possibly be in Barcelona again. It's a lot.
What's interesting is it feels like it's still done for Atletico. 10 points difference. They still have games in hand, which isn't ideal for them because they don't want to play more games. But even today against Celta, the day we're recording, they still got a draw and they led 2-1 until the 89th minute and they give up a sloppy goal. But like they were the better team all game and they've scored 6 in their last 2 games. There's still so much talent there and such a culture that they'll probably win the title. What's interesting is just the way you see it for next year. And maybe we'll have Alex Johansson come back on and talk about it. But everyone kind of counts out Real and Barca, but they're Real and Barca, you know? And I think back to when Pep dropped the 5 spot on Mourinho and it felt like Real was never going to catch up. And there'll always be generational players that want to play at those clubs. We know Mbappe is headed to one of the two at some point, right? So like, they're not going to be out that long. It feels like this is a new sustainable group for Atletico going forward. But it'll be interesting to watch that space of just what's the future for those clubs, especially coming out of COVID and the way that country's kind of been hit with the issues.
Bang, that's Europe. Plenty left in today's show, including our mailbag. We got Miguel Almiron questions. We got a TFC question. We got a Galaxy question. If you saw their kit release, their throwback, really well done. Perfect for Greg Vanney coming back. Check that out online. It's a jam-packed mailbag coming up next on AFP.
Welcome back to a football podcast, and it's now time for everyone's favorite segment, Ask AFP. Thanks to everyone who sent their questions this week. If you didn't get the chance to send in your own questions, just hop on Twitter and use the hashtag AskAFP and send them our way. Our first question is from Matt V, and he asks, what is your take on Miguel Almiron so far at Newcastle? What does his impact at Newcastle say about the quality of the MLS?
Miggy, baby. Miggy getting it done right now for Newcastle. A big week or two. I think he's had 4 goals in the last week. With Saint-Maximin coming back, he's kind of slid in as the 10. But this was the player we saw in MLS. Just crazy hardworking, covers so much ground, is clean but not, you know, pure chance creator or goal scorer. And he's kind of found that role with Newcastle. I think one of the issues for him going to Newcastle was he needed to be around talent. Like, he links play, but he doesn't create it all. And so he needs more guys around him. I think it's shown that we have 2 kind of veins coming from MLS right now, which is positive. One is young talent that you believe can get better. Brian Reynolds is a case of that. Alfonso Davies is a case of that. Gio Reyna, all of that. And then the other is you can go to MLS and find players that will help you win now. Players that are in their prime or more experienced. I think Almiron is an example of that one. And it's been huge both for him, but also for MLS teams to buy those young players from South America that want to get to that level. They see it as a legitimate pipeline. And I think it hasn't been as fluid or as straightforward as we wanted it to be Devang, but in the end, it seems like it's work that Almiron got better in Atlanta, went to a club in Europe, and now has found his feet and is a legitimate EPL starter.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem for him when things weren't going well is they were playing him in not the right position, and most of that is due to the fact that Newcastle was ravaged by injuries and COVID. Like, they didn't have bodies, but they brought in Joe Willock from Arsenal. Saint-Maxime is back. They played Almiron further up the field, better players, and it turns out he's pretty damn good. Shocking, right? And I'll credit Steve Bruce as well, which I don't say often, but I think he's been pleading for patience for a while, and I think he also was like, we're not technically playing where we want Miguel to play in the end, and we're doing this out of necessity right now. I remember the Arsenal game they played Newcastle, and he was a winger, and that midfield was atrocious. They couldn't do anything. And you watch them now, and you insert a bit of quality, and it's actually magic to watch them. That game on Saturday was amazing. I think to hold on with basically the second half down a player to Southampton, it was pretty remarkable. So I shouts to Miguel, shouts to Steve Bruce as well.
Titan asks, what would be your dream signing for TFC if Josie left and AO went to Europe?
I jokingly brought up Lucas Podolski as a joke and was yelled at by David off air. So I'll remove the banter. The names
get
I've
that
seen.
Out of my face.
How dare you, the audacity. The names I've seen, like, I'm not removing the name ID of people I'm familiar with from watching a bunch maybe in Europe and going with what I've heard or what I've seen, and the profile of that River Plate striker, Rafael Santos Boer, is probably someone who I'm looking at. Like, he's coming from River Plate, big game situations. He's played in the Copa Libertadores. He's going to be on maybe 4.1 million on a 4-year deal. So we're talking about a pretty sizable investment, but he's a striker, David. I admit, I've not watched him play personally myself, but if we're talking of the profile of the player I'm looking for, it's less high profile European based player and probably more in that South American based players, or it's someone who is still going to cost a hefty fee, but he's probably coming from this side of the hemisphere.
Yeah, and for Borja, I think he's 26 years old, and he's been around the Colombian team, but there's just no space at the forward position there. So that's one that would make sense, right? Where it'll be a big spend, it'll be to win now, but there'll be a little bit more long-term than a Defoe type signing would be, where you're talking about 2 years and then they're close to retiring or whatever. Although Defoe now has played 17 more years because he seems to just love it or whatever he does. So I think Borja makes sense. He's not a chance creator like Josie, but he is a pure finisher and he's physical and he'll dominate center backs as well. So it would be an interesting one there. And I would agree with you. I think there's that space, you know, in the South American market. Liga MX has been a really proven spot for goal scorers. Rui Diaz, Pulido, guys like that have come straight and been successful. That's another place to look. And there's a number of forwards. You hear Rogelio Funes Mori has been rumored to MLS, and Vincent Janssen as well at Monterrey. So those could be the type of guys you're looking at. Maybe Henry Martin at Club America is the next Mexican national team guy to come to MLS as well. So I think those names all kind of make sense.
Jamie asks, what are your expectations for LA Galaxy next season?
So as of now, very, very low. It is a bad team still. And Greg Vanney will make it better. And Jorge Villafano is a good pickup. That's kind of all they've done so far. But right now, the team is bad. The expectation is they still have a ton of holes to fill. And if they're able to do it well, and the biggest two being a defensive midfielder, a legitimate MLS starting high-level defensive midfielder, and help at center back. If they get the right defensive midfielder, they could probably cover at center back for now for a little while, especially bringing in Vanney and so allowing him to kind of give confidence to the guys who have fallen apart. But this is still a bad Galaxy team. And remember, they still don't have Christian Pavone. We don't know how that'll end, but this is a team that has way too many holes to compete in MLS.
Might need to pull like a Goodwill Hunting Matt Ben Affleck character with Daniel Starris. Like, I don't want to see you back here again. Like, you should not show up here the next day. Like, we're done. Like, you need to move on to better things and get out of this situation. I was looking at the roster, David, curious myself at what Greg Vanney will have to work with, and I can't help but agree with you where it's a mountain to climb. And I mean, obviously the roster is still in flux, but the lack of quality is evident. And defensively, I think we're talking about one of the worst teams in the league. And as of now, they have not addressed that. So I love the coaching staff. We know them well. We know Kevin Hartman well. It's, I think the staff they've got there is top notch, but the player development side, I think we have yet to see what they can do.
Two words to fix the team: Ryan Shawcross.
those kits, though, the throwback kits are amazing. And the fact that the boys are back with the coaching staff, it's well done.
Yeah. I'll say this. I'm not out on Chicharito yet. I think he'll have a good year. And we're like making jokes. They'll get players. Like, they literally just don't have players yet. And the CBA got signed today. So that'll probably help pieces. But it is an uphill battle to start with for Vanny and Co.
And finally, Clay asks, where does Klopp go next? Now, I just want to mention, I talked to Clay today about this. We had a little conversation, and he seems to be under, and David mentioned this a few weeks ago as well, was if Klopp had lost the room, like he kind of did with Dortmund, if that was kind of his end run. And although I can understand why people think that, I just want to say, like, let's see what happens when Van Dijk comes back and when their injuries kind of go down a little bit. And I know that there's a lot of guys on the team with dead, what I would say is, like, they have dead legs, to be honest. Like, that front three looks like they have worn thin because they've been running nonstop for 3 years. But, like, I want to see if the best defender in the world is in that lineup, how good they are. And that determines how I feel about where Klopp would either resign or leave, or if they would go back to where they were last year. I don't know.
So let me follow up, Nick, because I agree with you. Think I said that, but I meant to say more to what you were saying, which is, I don't think he's lost the locker room. I still think those guys want to play for him. There is a question mark out there. How sustainable is his style of play? And so the question of is he reached his limit like he did at Dortmund is, can these guys physically do it again? And if not, Klopp doesn't have a plan B that he can coach a team week to week as and create a style. So if they have reached their physical limit on playing under Klopp, and it turns out that that's one of the things about his team, which we're still not sure about, then there's probably nowhere for him to go in Liverpool. And that's the question mark, is do they have heavy legs because of injuries and COVID and the way the season's been pushed around? Or is 3 years at his style, playing it at a high level, physically unsustainable for a professional soccer player? And that could be true, because we've never seen teams press this way in the history of the game. So we still don't know what the long-term implications are.
I think right now you're seeing him play all the typical manager cards, like especially with the post-game stuff and who he's directing anger at and who he's trying to take the attention off of. We're seemingly doing like all of the cliche textbook post-match manager stuff. He's still doing that. So I think that's a comforting sign if I'm you, Nick. Like, I think he's obviously still fully in. And I even though I'm obviously down on the team, like I've stated, I tend to think you guys are coming at this with the right approach, in the sense that let's not judge where they're at now without seeing where they'll be possibly with a normal offseason and maybe, knock on wood, some normalcy next year when that Premier League season begins. But in terms of Klopp in general, I was thinking about it, and maybe not a national team, because I don't think that works in the sense of like how often you're in charge and like where, but I could see him trying his luck in North America sooner than later as well. Not as a retirement thing.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. So my first reaction is Germany. And when you look at him, he's a person who has very specific things he cares about. And he never played for the national team because he wasn't that great a player. So I think that would be big for him to manage the team. And when you look back, one of the big moments in his career that kind of got him notoriety was broadcasting on the 06 World Cup and the national team before that, because he was available as a TV broadcaster. And so it kind of helped him make his name. And I think he would see that as an opportunity. And I think right now there isn't a logical next step from Yogi Löw, if Yogi Löw ever leaves, which I guess you've got a good gig, why move away from it? So I think that one makes sense. And Devang, you're probably not wrong that it's not the right fit for his style, but he's considered one of the, four or five best managers in the world. It's his country. They're going to give him a shot and he would take it, I think. The other is there a project that interests him? because I think Liverpool specifically interests him in building up the tradition and the club and what it could be. And when I think about that, I wonder if the Spanish teams are broken in a different way that doesn't interest him and isn't a part of what he does. And in reality, the best landing spot, which I don't think he would ever take, is Man U. To do what he did at Liverpool, but for a club that is just that step higher of a global profile and could do it at even a higher level. But I think he's too intelligent to know he can't go.
That hurts. You said that. It honestly hurt my heart. Like, good Lord. Legit. Wow. If he ever did that, it's like Mourinho going to Tottenham or something, or Man U too with Chelsea.
He hasn't even done it, and yet you're still this affected, Nick. Just the thought crossing your mind.
Oof. How's that feel? God.
It's a great answer. That's a great answer. The Germany thing, I wonder, like, do you think are you in charge enough? You know what I mean? Like, is he able to instill his ethos enough in a national team setup? But I mean, Yogi Löw has, because he's never left. So it's a possible. I mean, you can, clearly, right?
Right. So I think the other part of it is, if you're him, you burned out at Dortmund, then you kind of recharged and took the Liverpool job. If he burns out, quote unquote, here, is this the right job next for the in-between of, you don't have the constant energy of day-to-day, but you're still around the game and you're still doing something that you're excited about in a new way to, like, kind of renew his energy. I think that's where, and I think we've seen that with a lot of big managers, is like, that's where that job fits in for them, is they've done it. There's nothing else to do. And it takes so much energy to be a club manager that they don't have anymore, but national team's actually the right fit for them. So it would be interesting. It would also be interesting because then where he sits in the development of the game in Germany, because you're now like the face of the game, and the way he sees the game has already taken hold a lot in Germany, but he would be influential in a lot of the top down development of the next generation, young players type stuff, which would be pretty cool to see him involved in.
Fantastic. Better days ahead for Liverpool, probably. I mean, it's bleak, but for them, bleak is fourth place in a Champions League spot, so keep it all in perspective, man.
Thanks to Bang.
As I say that in the abyss, because football is meaningless after this last week.
I think maybe Klopp should go to Arsenal then. Build it from the beginning.
Okay, let's move on. That's it. That's a good way to end this episode, folks, on an extreme downer note, as Nick projects something that's never going to happen, but we can dream. We dream well on the Football Podcast Twitter account. We're also on patreon.com/afootballpodcast. Join us today. Get the show ad-free. Join us on the Discord. And get us to 30 patrons. Thank you so much, as always, for listening to AFP. For Nick, David, and myself, we'll talk to you next week.